welcome to the 21st and penultimate episode of Season 4 of the Ubuntu UK podcast. It's Tuesday the 6th of December 2011, and in this episode we are going to have the final installment of our quiz and discuss the inevitable demise of Ubuntu. We will of course cover the latest news, events, a bit about Ubuntu, command line love, and go over your feedback. If you're listening live, you can send us messages using the chat facility on the website and in the IRC channel. I'm Tony, and with me this week are the compromised Mark Johnson.
Hello.
The partial Alan Pope.
Hello.
And the neuter Laura Cowan.
Hello.
Poor you.
That was just luck of the draw. Or unluck of the draw, as the case may be. What have you been up to though, Laura?
Watching you taking photos all day on Saturday.
Yes, you were my assistant for the day, weren't you?
I was, and I held the microphone when you videoed people.
Yes, it was great fun.
Yes, it was like the old days at Look Radio.
It was a bit like being in a conference again. Yeah. A car full of equipment.
What were you videoing?
I was doing a photo shoot slash video thing for Emma Lappin, who is the friend of Amy Ferguson.
Yay! She gets a
I've asked for that.
Who's a wedding florist, so we're doing some behind-the-scenes video and stuff.
Interviewed
I'll be
her.
Blogging about that in due course.
Right.
But yes, anything else?
And writing the UUPC panto with Tony.
No, you haven't.
Yes, I was. And we've just been recording it.
Yes. So listen to that. Listen to the next episode for that. What about you, Al?
I've been playing with a tool called Live Build, which is really cool. It's in the repository, apt-get install Live Build, and it allows you to build customized Ubuntu images. So you just run Live Build and a few parameters, and it will create an ISO image or like something you can put on a USB stick or whatever. But then there's loads of config that you can fiddle with, so you can change like the packages that are on there. So you could make an ISO image or a USB image that's pre-filled with all the useful stuff that you like and rip out the stuff you don't like and make your own USB stick or ISO, and you can have a Ubiquiti on there so you can install off it as well.
Is it specialized to Ubuntu?
It's a Debian tool.
Okay.
So Debian and Ubuntu use it.
Is it a little bit like SUSE Studio?
Yeah, locally though.
Oh, right.
But you could farm it out. You could run it in the cloud. You know, you could run it on an Amazon instance or something, and then it will do all the building on that machine, and then you download the ISO when it's finished. But it's all command line based, but it's really quite cool.
And it's all open source, so you can just get it and play with it.
Yep.
Wicked. What about you, Mark?
I've been getting really annoyed at Love Film.
Okay.
Have they basically they sent an email which I assume went to all people who they know use Linux, telling us that they were going to move their watch online, they call it, their basically film streaming service from Flash to Silverlight.
Well, that's good news, isn't it?
That's brilliant news. That means that we can't use it.
Even Microsoft don't want you to use Silverlight.
I thought the Linux implementation of Silverlight was free software, whereas the Flash player isn't free software.
Yes,
good,
except for the Moonlight doesn't support the crappy DRM.
Sorry,
I just said that sorry.
No, I think that was warranted.
I think that's fine.
Yes.
Double.
Which means that unless they want to implement the DRM with some free software means somehow, then and so I said, well, you've basically taken away my only way of using this service, so I don't want to pay for it anymore. And they didn't seem to think that was a valid point, so I've been getting quite annoyed with them. And their customer service isn't very good.
It's Amazon, isn't it?
It is Amazon. Well, yeah, owned by Amazon.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Are you going to have to switch back to using those things that they send you in the envelopes? What are they called?
Well, no, I use DVDs, but part of my package, which I pay for, I also have unlimited streaming with this service, I now can't use because I don't want to buy an Xbox or an iPad or a PS3 or an internet-enabled TV to do so. I want to carry on using the method that I've been using all along. Thank you very much.
Yeah, it does seem a little bit of a backward step, particularly as everybody else is using HTML5 rather than Silverlight these days.
I'm kind of torn, you know, because you're moving away from Flash, which is good.
Well, yeah, move away from Flash, but move away from Flash to the right thing, surely.
Mm.
Which would be?
Yeah, but how is it implemented on every other platform then? Because iPad doesn't have Silverlight. Neither does the Xbox.
But they use, because they use, they stream to an app. They don't stream through a web plugin.
Some proprietary stuff.
Yes.
It's a shame.
MFraz74 on the IRC channel says you have to go back to torrenting movies.
Damn. Well, this is the point I made to them, because apparently they need Silverlight for the DRM to appease the movie rights holders, but if I wanted to pirate the movies, then I wouldn't be giving Lovefilm money. I'd be downloading them anyway, so I don't want to do it. And they're assuming that I want to anyway.
They're forcing you to do it, aren't they?
That's it. That's it. They forced me into it.
Okay. Well, while you cool down, we'll have a quiz.
So we've been doing this quiz for the whole of this season.
Yeah.
Not in every episode. And we've all had a go at it. And I think Tony's winning at the moment.
Probably.
Yes.
Yeah, Tony's winning by one against me, isn't he?
Okay, well, we can fix that. I mean, give you an opportunity to catch up. so we're having another quiz, same as the very first one, actually, the first episode.
Which you came up with in the car on the way down.
I did, yes. So in the studio, I've lugged our state-of-the-art 3D holographic display.
It is nice, isn't it?
Isn't it just?
Which
shiny.
It's showing the numbers 1 to 20. Some of them have been blocked out because we used those last time.
And some of us replaced the ones we used last time.
Okay. I'll go around the team getting them to pick a number, and that will reveal a question and a picture. I'll then read that to them, and they need to come up with the answer with no help from the other presenters and no help from IRC or Wikipedia or whatever. So okay. If you've ever seen BBC's Question of Sport, it's nothing like that. So you need to put your 3D glasses on. Yeah, we've done that joke.
Glasses on.
First, let's have Laura. Can you pick one of the numbers from the 3D holographic display? And we'll turn it round.
Number 5.
Okay, so we turn that round, and it's a picture of Graham Binns on a beach polishing his lens.
Ooh.
Is it a big lens?
It's telescopic.
It is. Interesting. So your question, Laura.
Yes.
According to Mark Shuttleworth, by what release will Ubuntu power tablets, phones, TVs, fridges, and so on?
The LTS after next, which would be 2014, April.
Yes, I will accept that answer. 14.04, yes.
I said all the words.
You did.
Not necessarily in the right order.
Excellent. Point to Laura.
Hey.
Mark, could you pick a number from the 3D display?
I'll have number 12, please.
Number 12. Oh, ha! That's Dave Walker in the bath on a conference call.
Oh, that's a mental image.
Nice.
It's not mental.
In 3D as well.
Oh, that hurts.
He sure is 3D.
Mark, your question.
Yes.
Back in UUPC, Season 3, Episode 1.
Oh, before my time.
We interviewed... Well, you should have been listening. We interviewed two school children who've created a popular Ubuntu derivative.
You did.
What's it called?
Oh, dear me. A popular Ubuntu derivative.
So they say, yes.
Oh,
it apparently ranks very highly on DistroWatch.
More on
well,
that
what
later.
Doesn't?
I'm gonna have to hurry you.
I can't think of any popular. Let's say Lubuntu.
No, I'm afraid that's not the right answer. I can throw it open to Laura and Tony. Do you remember?
Vaguely, they were Irish lads, weren't they?
They were, yeah.
Yeah.
I want to say, I think it's wrong, but EduTux.
Okay, and Laura, do you have a... I'm going to take that straining as a no. So the answer is Zorin OS.
Zorin.
Coming back to you now. So Tony, it's your first question. Pick a number from the 3D display.
I will go with number 15.
Number 15, we turn that round. Ah, it's Miguel de Casa porting mono to OS 2.
What a strange thing to see.
How bizarre. Very strange. So Tony, your question.
Hello.
What version of Firefox web browser shipped with the original Warty Warthog?
Ooh. Okay, 0.7.
No, I'm afraid not. It's 0.99.
Okay.
I would have accepted 0.93 as well.
Would you now? Oh, you the generous one.
So, zero. Let me just write zero.
Need a bigger pen.
Back
all
to Laura.
Over the board.
Your second question. Pick a number, please.
Oh, yes. Two.
Ah, that's Alan Bell clearing out his chickens.
What's he doing with that one?
And that's not a euphemism.
Oh, someone's just chased one out of the garden.
Oh, no. Who could that be?
Oh, well, under the trampoline.
Laura, your question. According to the UUPC website,
oh dear,
how many presenters and guest presenters have there been on the show in total? Oh,
wow. According to the website?
Yep.
There have been as in six.
The first line. No, in total, in the whole four series.
Oh, according to the blog thing.
The first line bit. That says, in this week's episode, and then a list of names. So what's the total number over the whole of three seasons?
It's Tony Allen. Mark.
It's all right, we've got 15 minutes.
Laura. Mm-hmm.
Can you remember the names of the other two?
To the Laura, okay. Andy Piper, Anton, Simon, Dave, to the Dave, Alan.
It's like 8,000 Alans. Sorry, I shouldn't interrupt. Carry on.
Rudolph.
Did MPT count? Because he was there in person, wasn't he?
I think he was it. I'm not going to say anything.
Yeah, MPT, because he was there in person.
I'm actually looking for a number.
I know. I'm getting there.
You don't have that many fingers.
I'm up, no,
those,
no, I'm
one
struggling.
One of those integers.
I'm up to 13 now. Yeah, let's go with 13.
13. I'm afraid that's not correct. Can I open it up to Tony and Mark? Can either of you?
12.
You're just not counting MPT.
Basically.
14.
What was yours? 12 and 14. So close. It's 15.
Oh, no. So who was I missing?
I've got a list.
Maybe we can look at that afterwards.
Yeah, I can't remember. But I did actually sit there and make a list. So it is true, and that's a fact. Mark.
Hello.
Your next question. So how many points have we got so far?
I think Laura's the only person who's got anything right.
Yeah, that's right.
There's a change.
Mark?
I'll have number four, please.
Number four. Ah, that's our illustrious leader, Mark Shuttleworth, wearing a Darth Vader mask.
Ooh.
The Force is with him.
He looks quite comfortable in it.
He does. How do we know it's him? That's the question.
The accent.
Right. Mark.
Yes.
Your question.
Go on.
Who wrote the original blog aggregator, Planet Planet?
Oh, that is a good question.
Is that a good question because you know the answer?
I did know the answer at one time in my life.
Okay. This might be someone I vaguely heard of, otherwise you wouldn't be asking the question, so I'm going to have to guess. I don't know, Miguel de Caza.
No. I can throw it open.
John Bon Jovi.
Okay. No.
I don't think it is, but Jeff Waugh.
I would have accepted either Jeff Waugh or Scott James Remnant. Yes.
Oh, Scott was the other person I was going to say. Oh, fantastic. I got a point.
Yes.
Yes.
Tony. He's very competitive.
Yeah, Tony, for the benefit of the tape, Tony does dance.
I'm glad the webcam's off this week.
Yeah.
Oh, yes.
Okay, so over to Tony. It's time for your question, your second question. Pick a number.
Okay, let's go with number six.
Number six. Oh, Scott James Remnant poking an iPad. Interesting.
Mm, yeah. He's good at that. Yeah.
And again,
it's quite a good
not
action.
A euphemism. Tony.
Photo,
Tony, your question.
Yes.
What is the Wing Commander's daughter's name and where does she work?
Oh,
this was like the last episode.
Yeah. Yes, it was.
She works at a horse hospice.
A horse hospice.
Where they
her name is one of the critical components as well.
Her name is one of the critical components. And you see, her name has been replaced by the name of the person who's in this week's thing that I've been preparing before the show.
Yeah, I'm me.
Yeah, which I know and I can tell you.
Actually, I didn't know that there was going to be feedback from them this week. It could well be.
I don't think it is the same name. Cause it's, okay. It's...
And where is the horse hospice? Because I know that bit.
It's not, it's... I would say Georgina, but it's not. Not Georgina.
I'm going to have to hurry you. I'm not. There's plenty of time, okay. But I'm going to hurry you anyway.
Okay, let's say... It's Camilla, and it's the Dorking Horse Hospice.
Anyone else like to try and guess?
I know it's the King's Lynn Pony Club or something.
So close.
I don't know her name, though.
Okay. I'll
Pamela.
You're not... Neither, no.
Lily.
It's Marjorie Carmuthan Fothergill. The King's Lynn Pony Rehabilitation Centre.
Of course.
Of course. I
said similarly. I've
got the King's Lynn bit.
Mm-hmm.
It's a pony.
So, Tony, no points there. 0 points for Tony there. I'll just put zero in here.
But you've got the one that I got from just before.
Might have. Laura, back to you for your final question. Pick a number.
19.
Ah. Ooh. Our friend from Open Sousa, Andrew Ruffer, in a hotel cuddling a gecko.
Mm.
Oh, interesting. Mm. I know they like geckos. I didn't really like them that much.
It's a special cuddle.
Right.
I thought geckos were green.
Maybe he was once. Maybe cuddled him.
They're all green by the time
much.
Andrew's finished with them.
Back in UUPC past, we interviewed Barnaby Edwards from Textbook Stuff.
Yes.
And we gave away a prize donated by him. What was the prize?
Ooh,
specifically?
It was one of the books, and I think it was a Charles Dickens.
If you can either give me the title or the name of the person who did the audio reading.
I think Barnaby did the reading, but I think it was Bleak House or Tale of Two Cities.
Okay, so...
Yes, two hunts.
It was Charles Dickens, but unfortunately the rest.
It was a Ghost Stories.
Ooh.
It was a Ghost Stories one, but I can't remember the title.
Okay, I'm actually going to let you have
Mark and I both look at each other. There's a tension in the room.
Did either of you know the answer?
Yes.
I think I do.
Oh
dear. Well, I'm afraid I'm going to give
signalman.
It to Laura. Yes.
Laura's not going to win
what
anyway.
I was going to say. I was going to say
it was
Watchmen.
The Signalman and Other Ghostly Tales. And who was the person?
It was John Sessions?
Yes, it was. Shame that wasn't your question, Tony. Because you would have really trumped that.
There's no chance that question was going to be you.
And the answer to the question that we set in the competition was the mystery of Edwin Drood.
Good.
No points for that.
Save that for next year when you do a quiz. Mark.
Hello.
Pick a number.
I'll have number... What have we got left? Ooh.
9 and 17.
I will have number 17.
17. Ah, it's Linus Torvalds doing nothing controversial whatsoever.
Oh, that's nice to see.
Oh, interesting. Mark.
Hello.
Which package caused controversy back in 2004 when it was installed in Ubuntu by default, and what did it contain?
You mean you want the actual name of the package?
How old were you then, Mark?
I'd rather not answer that question. It was in Ubuntu by default in 2004.
Mm-hmm.
And what did it contain?
Mm-hmm.
Ooh.
And it caused controversy.
Caused controversy. So it's got to be something closed source or potentially patent infringing.
Or just rude.
Or just, that could be. Oh, yeah. Could be. Was it. What's that thing called that Tony showed me at work once?
Hey, what?
Oh, hey! And we'll have to call it a day there.
Sure he didn't show you at work.
Possible lawsuit.
I can't think of anything that was in Ubuntu that early which caused controversy from the licensing point of view.
Okay.
I'm going to take a guess then that it's that other thing.
I didn't show you...
Yes, I've got it here as the other thing. Well done.
Okay.
I think it probably wasn't that.
Okay.
I'm going to have to hurry, you know.
Okay, all right. I'll guess something like mono.
I'm afraid that's not true. Not right. Laura, do you know what
Tony has his hand up.
I know Tony's got his hand up, but you actually...
I have no idea.
Okay, Tony.
It's the human nudie wallpapers.
Yes, it
is
was.
That far back?
Nudity, yes.
That's not the thing Tony showed me at work.
Yes, exactly. Let's just be clear about it.
And the package name?
Oh,
I that's know. What you need to give for the answer.
It's human dash theme dash nudie.
No, dash I'm just gonna have to write zero there. it was Ubuntu dash calendar. Ubuntu it was a calendar, remember?
Yeah, it was.
Yes, yeah, right. Yeah, one for every month of the year.
You kind of wonder what possessed them, really.
Yep.
Anyway.
But not with 10 seconds in this segment left to go. I'm not wondering that.
So who won?
Tony.
Okay. I'll have number nine, please.
Number nine.
It's the only one left.
Ah, it's John O'Bacon stroking his beard.
Oh, it's good for you.
Tony.
Yeah.
Name the three people we interviewed on UUPC Season 1, Episode 1.
I think I can do this.
Spent enough time editing it.
Becky Hogg. Yes. ORG. Jan Kleiss from the Belgian Loco.
I have trouble pronouncing
yes,
that.
The Belgian Loco. Jan Kleiss of the I Don't Think I Can Pronounce That fame. And Andrew Woffer of OpenSUSE.
Correct. Yes. Yay. 1 point to Tony. So how many points has everyone got? Mark?
Got none.
No.
You got?
Yes. Tony got 2 points, unfortunately.
That would be two.
And Laura got 2 points as well.
Okay, so that's a tie.
Yes.
So,
okay. So
we're out of questions.
No, we're not. I have loads of questions, but so
or you were
already in the lead, mm-hmm. and you've just got two more points. Therefore, you've won the series.
No, hold on.
Well, you get a point.
You get a point for winning each quiz.
Oh, yeah.
Although you could give one each because you two got one each.
Wow, this is more complicated than I was expecting. So
it depends who won this game gets 1 point towards the championships.
Okay, one question then.
Okay.
And whoever shouts out first gets to answer.
So if I get the answer to this,
I've still won.
You've still won the series.
No. If she gets the answer, then it's a draw between... No, it's not because... Because
Laura hasn't got any rounds right. It hasn't got any points from the rest of the season. So
it's a bit of a moot point.
I have still
really.
Won, but Laura, Alan, carry on.
Just to make that clear.
I commit the lead shorter.
I kind of zoned out a bit.
We're giving you a chance to try to find a question.
Oh, okay.
This is for honour now.
This is...
Alan,
to the nearest number. Get off.
To the nearest whole number.
Yep. Pipe this through word count minus L.
I'm trying to think of all the things I could count.
to the nearest number, how many packages are there installed on my laptop?
Oh, good.
5,000.
5,000. Mark, do you want to have a hunt?
Oh, go on then. 21,398.
Are we doing closest wins?
There's only like 20,000 in the repository.
All right, I didn't know
that. Just giving him a clue.
All right, so start again. How many do you think I've got on my laptop?
19,000.
Out of 20,000?
It's possible.
All right, 2,336.
Oh, look, that's 5,000 now.
Make up your minds, people.
Tony.
I'll say 4,000.
So all of you went way over, but the nearest was Mark.
Hey, okay. Does that mean I get 2,336 points?
But Mark wasn't in the tiebreaker.
It doesn't matter. Mark. Okay. The total number was 1,894. There we go. That's decided.
Okay. That's quite low.
Hit the button. Let's move on.
Well, hang on. We need to just recognise that Laura didn't do hugely well over the course of the quiz. Mark was second. Alan, you didn't do hugely well over the course of the whole series.
But better than me.
But I think it's just worth
stream now.
Noticing that I did win.
Right.
Sorry.
I won all the quiz.
He's so in charge of the music.
The quizzes.
Tony is dancing again.
What?
All right. And he's dancing again.
I feel better now.
Is that a Creative Commons license, that audio?
Yep. I made that especially for this show. And now it's time for the news.
Greg Croer Hartman has announced Linux long-term kernel 2.6.32 is now released, as is the more modern 3.0.11 and the 3.1.3 kernels. Another well.
Fantastic.
Yeah, fit more numbers in that, Laura.
Yeah.
So this is part of the new sort of have a release of the kernel, which is supported long term, so people can put it in
embedded devices, in set-top boxes, yep. TVs, tablets, fridges.
Cool. The European Space Agency has expressed its intention to publish more of its software under open source licenses. The software developed for the agency includes systems for the collecting and processing of remote sensor data, and the tools have been reused internationally under open source licenses, including here in the UK.
Is this to compete with NASA working on stuff like whatever it was they did, OpenStack or Eucalyptus or whatever it is they did?
This isn't sort of stuff which directly competes with that. No, this is more just sort of the general tools they use, I think, rather than the architectural server platformy stuff.
Will people be sending their own rockets up as a result of having all this code?
Most of the stuff I've seen is more to do with stuff like atmospheric monitoring and things like that.
Okay.
Useful, I suppose.
For someone, the Department for Culture, Media and Sport has published a report, fancy that, praising the Raspberry Pi and after-school clubs as ways of promoting programming amongst the younger generation. The report goes on to point out that ICT and computer science are different but complementary areas of the curriculum whose programs are insufficiently rigorous and in need of reform.
So we were talking about this a couple of episodes ago.
Yeah,
we
recognise that. Yeah. Someone should do something.
They listened
about
to
that.
Us and now they wrote a report.
Yeah, totally us.
Yeah. Yassi, the open source search engine, has released version 1.0 of its distributed search portal software. The software runs as a local web application and runs on Mac, Windows, and Linux.
So what do you need this for?
I don't know. It's when Google's down.
Basically, imagine that Google's search index was a BitTorrent, which was distributed between lots of different people rather than all being in one place.
Oh, it's a P2P search.
Yes. So you install your node and have it index stuff, and then that shares its index with other nodes that other people are running.
But doesn't something need to index the index?
No, because it uses a distributed hash table like BitTorrent does, so there doesn't need to be a centralized server. They can just find out about each other by some clever means, which I don't fully understand.
That sounds cool.
Yes, it is. I installed it today just to see.
Fancy that!
Like.
On your own little cloud.
On my own little cloud. Because it also provides a portal, so you send a query to your node and it looks through its index and then also sends a query out to other nodes and gets stuff from their indexes and gives you a page of results.
What stops me putting one up that's got Duff info on it and feeding yours with Duff info?
I don't know.
That could be fun. Redirect everyone to my website.
IEEE fellow Jeremy Voice has warned of security threats to smartphones posed by free apps. Voice's research has uncovered malware in more than 2,000 free apps that can harvest data from your phone and transmit it to third parties. Further privacy concerns have been raised by Android hacker Trevor Eckhart, who has published details of Carrier IQ, a rootkit installed on many US smartphones by manufacturers and carriers, which is able to collect and report very detailed information about the phone's usage.
It's been all over the news for the last couple of days, this.
Mm, pretty scary.
Days. Yes.
Was the first thing you do check your phone to see if you had it?
Well, no, I hadn't read anything that suggested it was on anything that's not that isn't in the US. But then again, I haven't rooted my phone, so I can't tell.
Yeah. So the idea is that carriers...
No, I think you can tell without rooting your phone. It shows up as one of the running processes.
Oh, right. I thought it only did that if you had root access. But it doesn't show as one of the running processes at the moment.
What do they call it? Something does not carry IQ?
It's called something like CIQ or something.
And,
like that.
And you can't kill the process.
Yeah.
So if you go to the force quit thing in the list of applications you've got running, there's a force quit button and it just doesn't quit.
Oh, right.
And the guy in the video was showing how he could tap keys on the keyboard and he could see the key presses going to that demon. So the demon was clearly getting them. Whether it was doing anything with those key presses, whether it was sending them back to... mothership or not is debatable, or I don't know whether that's known yet, but yeah, they've come under a lot of fire for that.
Not very good. And that's the end of the news.
It's time for Command Line Love. Sorry. A bit sick there.
You're sorry.
Sorry about that. Michael Spanbauer sent us this. He says, I heard some people saying that they had to disable Pulse Audio in order to use some older applications. So I guess not everybody is aware of the existence of the OSS wrapper. These are present in the OSS/dev/disp interface to the application while talking to Pulse Audio at the other end. So check out a couple of commands. One is PADSP, which is in the Pulse Audio Utils package, and AOSS in the ALSA OSS package. Simply prefix your application with the OSS wrapper, and it will show up with a proper name in the Pulse Audio Volume Control as a playback source and or recording sync. So in the volume control thing, the GUI, you can individually turn apps up and down and mute them and that kind of stuff. It's quite cool.
Yeah, that sounds good. Particularly if you've got like an old game or something that maybe doesn't use the Pulse Audio magic.
That's one of the reasons, actually, I stopped playing Enemy Territory, which was a great game that the Log Radio guys all used to play together on a Log Radio server on a Wednesday night and a Sunday night. And one of the reasons I stopped was because in newer releases of Ubuntu that had shipped with Pulse Audio and various other sound changes, you couldn't get the thing to make any noise. There was loads of like wrapper scripts and stuff that could possibly make it work, but I never got it working reliably.
So it sounds like you should just be able to run PADSP
before the command, yeah. And it should let you run. Yeah.
Excellent. Well, thank you for sending that in, Michael.
There's been a lot of talk in the press recently about this being the beginning of the end for Ubuntu. An often cited indication of this is that Ubuntu has been overtaken by Linux Mint, a derivative distribution, on DistroWatch. Are we about to be put out of a job, or is this all just media naysaying?
This is a job. You get paid for it.
Oh, yeah. What's this point?
Oh, yeah.
Put out of a voluntary contribution to the community, I should have said there.
Yeah, it's interesting, isn't it?
Yeah. So one of the things that people have been shouting about is the DistroWatch rankings. Now, distrowatch.com is a website that lists hundreds of Linux distros, the mainstream ones and specialists, special interest ones, tiny sofa Linux and all that sort of stuff, that has a ranking table on one side of it, and it says which page has basically got the most hits over a certain period.
Yep, hits per day averaged over a week or 6 months or a year or whatever.
Which page of what?
If you go to DistroWatch.
Of the actual website?
If you go to DistroWatch, on the right-hand side there's a table.
Yeah.
And there's a list, and you could be forgiven for thinking at a brief glance that is a ranking of those, how popular those distributions are.
Oh, right.
However,
it's actually number of hits on that page.
So each distro has its own page.
On DistroWatch.
On DistroWatch.
Yeah. Okay.
So
I've never been to DistroWatch.
No, this is the problem. And also, for example, if you type Ubuntu into Google, the DistroWatch page is about, well, it doesn't appear on the page. You have to scroll down to see it.
So someone looking for it or looking for help with Ubuntu wouldn't actually go to DistroWatch.
No.
So the point is that Ubuntu used to be the top of this table and it has now slipped.
Yes, and this isn't the first time. In 2007, PC Linux OS overtook Ubuntu on DistroWatch. And PC Linux OS is still around. I don't know how many installs they have, how many users they have, but arguably Ubuntu didn't die then when everyone said it was dead. Yeah. It's still around now.
Pretty sure it didn't. Yeah.
Yes. I think we're still here. The problem is that there's a number of problems here. One is that actually Canonical and the Ubuntu project and people who speak for the Ubuntu project, whether they're community members or employees of Canonical, have actually used the DistroWatch stats in the past to say that, hey, if you actually look or search for the word DistroWatch on the Canonical website, there are old press releases that say, you know, what is Ubuntu? Ubuntu is frequently is number one on DistroWatch a lot of the time. So there's a lot of people saying, well, all the Ubuntu people are saying this isn't the end of Ubuntu because we've dropped down one place on DistroWatch because. Given that we used to actually quote that, and when we're saying that DistroWatch isn't a valid measure, used to use it as a valid measure.
Hmm. Scott James Remnant was saying that on Twitter, basically, because he seemed to think it was hypocritical of the Ubuntu project to be so dismissive of DistroWatch when it wasn't in its favour, and yet poring over the stats and celebrating every increase in stats when it was going in their favour.
I can see that point of view. I can totally see why people might think it is hypocritical, but the Ubuntu community is a big bunch of people, and there isn't one central voice. People disagree with Canonical, community members disagree with Canonical, and individual community members disagree with each other. So whilst I personally don't think that it's a measure of how popular the distro is. It's a measure of something.
Yeah.
But I don't think it's a measure directly, and it doesn't linearly scale with the number of people you have using the distro, up or down. It's still difficult to argue that when you've got people within your own community who argue that that is exactly what it is.
So is that what all this is based on? Just that, or are there other indicators too?
Well, there's a few things that happened at the same time. There's that we dropped down one and Mint went up at the same time as Mint have a new release coming out, Mint 12.
Okay.
And Clem, the guy behind Mint, puts out this blog post that says, hey, Mint 12 is coming along nicely, and puts a lot of bluster in there about the fact that he thinks Mint is catching up with Ubuntu and, you know, may well overtake Ubuntu in terms of installed user base, not overtake Ubuntu on DistroWatch, in actual installed computers.
How can we measure that? How do we measure that?
Yeah, it's a good question. and the number that Canonical have put out has been, in the past, it's been 4 million users, then 8 million users, and now it's 20 million users is the number that they put out.
And also, aren't Canonical trying to target more? I mean, they're obviously trying to target normal home users as well, but they're also trying to target like corporate deployments as well. But
yeah,
I mean,
and some of those
purely a community OS, isn't it?
What, Mint?
Mint.
I'm sure they would love to have corporate users as well. I'm sure they probably do have some corporates that have them deployed on the desktop. Mm. But in terms of how we count it, it's by no means straightforward. We don't have a central counter that logs every install. We have some ways of measuring stuff like hits on the archive, hits on the website, that kind of stuff, you know, and that's a bit fluffy and it's nowhere near accurate, but then none of them are. So any distro that says we have this many users, unless they're a distro which is sold with hardware or sells boxed copies in the shop.
Or like Anton, he's written his own app to count them.
Unless it has some like, you know, thing that properly phones home for every unique install, then all the numbers put out by all the distros are made up.
Then you can't tell what is a live install, how long does an install have to be around to be considered valid, do you track if it disappears, all that sort of stuff.
Yeah, I mean, I've reinstalled Ubuntu 5 times just today on a box because I was
having
testing
problems.
Well, no, I'm trying to get the stats up. It's because I was testing out this live build.
Right, I see.
So, yes. You know, I'm booting lots of times and those could count, you know, as multiple installs.
Yeah.
But, you know, I'm doing that on multiple machines and they're all behind one IP address. So none of them are accurate.
The other thing is that people seem to be thinking there's a big problem in the Ubuntu community over Unity. And that this is driving people away from Ubuntu towards, most of them seem to be going towards Linux Mint, or at least most of the people that I have seen that said they are, which is about 5, have said they're going to Linux Mint. And people will go, oh yeah, there's a lot more people doing that. There could well be more people saying that. I just haven't seen that many people saying it. And it hasn't been something that's been hugely in our email box either. People haven't been complaining that much about Unity. But for a lot of people, it seems to be a make or break issue. This is the place where they part company with Ubuntu. So I wonder whether combined with the two, people seem to be seeing that these are big clouds of foreboding rolling over the landscape towards Ubuntu.
And I can understand that some people don't like. I can understand people don't like Unity. I can understand that people don't like the fact that GNOME 2 has gone away, and those are two separate things.
Yes,
you put the two together. My desktop has changed, and I had no control over it because Canonical took away GNOME 2 when, in fact, the GNOME project took away GNOME 2 when they went to GNOME 3, and GNOME 2 is not really properly maintained anymore. Now, okay, someone's forked it and there's now Mate, which gives you a GNOME 2-like interface, and there are other options out there, but some people think that because of this this interface that they don't like and that they didn't choose, their only option is to completely wipe their computer and put a different distro on there, rather than just apt-get install LXDE or Kubuntu or one of the other desktops that's in the repository. They feel so passionately about it that you can't even say to them, just install a different desktop. You don't have to destroy your distro and start all over again. They feel that passionate. It's that strong. But I would argue that the number of people who do that is actually not that huge. Like you, I'm not blinkered. I do see people say it a lot, and I see it on Google+. I'm not, you know, diverting my gaze from people who are telling me that they're, you know, switching to Mint. But I don't think it's anywhere near as bad as people are making it out to be. It's not everyone, and it's not everyone I know is switching away from Ubuntu. There are some, and it may be a significant number, but I don't think it's millions.
How many people are reporting having done it as opposed to saying they will do it?
And also, how many people are going to come back later? Some of the people who switch distro are natural distro switchers, are the kind of people who, oh, my display doesn't work, I'll try a different distro.
Yeah. They're the kind of people who are more likely to use something like distrowatch.com.
Yes. Yeah, true. Yeah. And that's fine. And, you know, choice is a great thing. And if they want to go and use a different distro, that's fine. And there's no law that says they have to use Ubuntu. It's unfortunate if, you know, we've messed up in such a way that they think their only option is to switch distro. But I'd argue that there's going to be some people out there who switch distro because the thing they're switching to is easier and they just want an easy life. And actually, some of them quite like Ubuntu and have used it for a long time. And chances are some of them will come back.
That's exactly what I did when Edgy was released. Didn't work on my laptop, started using OpenSUSE for 6 months and then switched back afterwards because OpenSUSE didn't do what I wanted.
I think we need to get John to do another survey.
So, should we be worried about those vocal people who are shifting off to other distros? Okay, it's great that they have the freedom and things to do that, but does it mean that they haven't been listened to, or their concerns haven't been listened to in the design process, or the
some argue that, yeah. I'm not sure we should be worried about everyone who's... We'll never make a distro that everyone wants.
All it really shows is that you can't please everyone, which we're never going to do.
Which is why we have Ubuntu, Kubuntu, Lubuntu, Subuntu. You know, we have multiple desktop derivative distros. Like, yeah, you can't please everyone. And the people who are leaving, some of them are contributors. They actually file bugs. They actually respond to bugs. They actually fix things. They do some meaningful contribution. Some of them are, in inverted commas, just advocates of Ubuntu, and they will hand out CDs and they'll talk to people about it. Is it a massive loss if we lose people who are, in inverted commas, just users? We'll have lost some mind share. We'll have lost someone who might want to tell other people about Ubuntu. They might now not do that. And they might say, well, actually, I personally don't use Ubuntu anymore. I use Mint. So should you. And so we lose some advocacy. Mm. Does the desktop become worse because those people are leaving? Probably not.
One thing that we get quite a bit of... No. We get some email about for feedback is people asking us why we don't have more rants about things like this, why we don't rant about the button switch inside, why we don't rant about Unity, why we toe the party line.
Because it's not that much of a problem, perhaps.
Well, I looked at it as that I use Unity and it hasn't annoyed me enough that I would want to shift to a different desktop. And if I did, I would install, I don't know, LXD or something like that. It hasn't been, neither of these things, the buttons or Unity or whatever, has been enough of a problem for me to try something else. I've got used to it. I must admit Unity was a bit of a change, but I did get used to it. I have got used to it. And I still use various older versions of Ubuntu on other machines that I haven't upgraded for whatever reason. And I still switch between them and Windows at work reasonably easily. So I don't think it's a showstopper problem that some people seem to make it out to be.
I get accused of being not impartial enough, and because now that I work for Canonical, I can't possibly say anything bad about Unity. Feel free to go and have a look at my YouTube channel, and you'll see me ranting about things that are broken in Unity. And I do file bugs, and I do rant on Twitter, and I do rant on Google+. I just don't quit the project and steam off in a huff and install another distro. I file a bug and I go and talk to the designer or whoever implemented that thing and ask them if it's ever going to get fixed, yes or no, and when is the plan to get it fixed, and is there a workaround, and get help rather than just flounce off in a huff.
And it's not really a ranty kind of podcast, is it?
No. It's not. It's not really in our style. Although, you know, occasionally we do get wound up about something, but it's clearly not the same things as the rest of the community.
Maybe we're just not representative.
Yeah. Problem is, I actually quite like Unity. I said it.
Oh, you suck up, you.
Yeah, I'm a KDE user and I even quite like it.
Wow.
That's it.
That bombshell.
Three of us use Unity and don't have a problem with it, and one of us uses KDE.
I'm a little bit scared of upgrading to it at work.
Okay. Why? Because it, really. Stuff will break. Like, but you know stuff at work that won't work, like Eclipse and Symfony and stuff like that.
It's less that than at home. There are a couple of things now that I use for uni, but mostly it's web and Thunderbird stuff that's going to work. Whereas at work, I've got a whole lot of package stuff that isn't built for Ubuntu specifically.
Right.
So I'm kind of a bit wary.
But you'd have that wariness whether Unity was there or not, wouldn't you?
Well, it's not about whether it'll work so much as just the sweeping my mouse across the screen kind of thing and knowing where to go. Right. I don't know. It's just a kind of comfort thing and knowing where everything is. Whereas at home, right. I don't have that problem. I'd never had done.
Right.
Well, I don't know.
Yeah, I can understand people who have that little bit of transition anxiety, but really, come on in, the water's lovely.
Yeah, well, come April, I won't have much choice, because I look great.
My prediction is that in 1204, Unity will be really solidly stable. There'll be loads of performance improvements, and some of the people who have spent the last year telling us how rubbish it is will use it in 1204 and will go, oh yeah, it's slightly less rubbish than I thought it was.
And we'll come back to this next year.
Find out if you were right.
Or maybe we'll switch and call it the UU Mintcast.
Let us know if you think we should be talking about Mint all the time or whether you should stick with Ubuntu. Email into podcast@ubuntu-uk.org.
And now it's time for the bit about Ubuntu.
Yay.
And the
Gerald.
First... there it is. The first alpha of 1204 LTS Precise Pangolin has been released.
Yes, and I upgraded my desktop.
Did it break?
Nope.
It's Unity lovely.
Yep.
Okay.
It's pretty much exactly like 1110. There's not much different. And that's intentional. Because
it's LTS.
Before, it's designed that it's... The focus is on quality to make it better.
Mm-hmm.
And cool. it just works, really.
Excellent.
Cool.
Oh, it's me.
Yeah.
A new edition of Ubuntu Unleashed has been published, covering Ubuntu 1110 and apparently 1204 LTS.
Which is quite good.
Yes, because that's not out yet. Well, yeah. I think this is from Matthew Helmke, who we interviewed at UDS about 18 months ago, I think, maybe 2 years ago.
Okay.
Who was on the Forum Council and
is
a community contributor and writes books.
Yeah, and this is one of the Sam's books.
Yeah, it's a really big book.
So he's got a website for it now. It is one of the really thick ones, as Alan says. ISBN numbers on there, so you can... I presume it's out now, so I presume you can get hold of it and see into the future as to what 1204 will contain. Mm. One of the difficult things about writing a book is the lead times mean you've got to write it before the software is released.
Absolutely.
If it's going to be current.
I think I might write a book and say it's going to cover 1404.
Yeah, somebody should do that.
Yeah.
With some really weird, freaky graphics Photoshop on top of it. Launchpad has launched a new customizable bug listings feature. You can try it out by joining the Launchpad beta testers group on Launchpad.
Yes, so, I had to leave the beta testing because this feature was broken for me. But, but the good thing about Launchpad is they do releases like really, really rapidly. Every month there's a new release of Launchpad. And that's why stuff kind of changes and moves around in Launchpad a lot.
So explain what this feature should have been if it was working.
No, I can't because I switched it off.
Basically, I think it lets you filter bugs by different criteria. So you get a listing which just shows the bugs that you want to see.
Right.
Rather than having to sift through everything.
And you could already do that, but you have to go there and then tick all the boxes to say, only show me bugs that are not fixed and, have this status.
Bit
and
more
these
query
flags.
Style.
Yeah, you had to build a kind of query. And I think this lets you have, pre-built queries that you can reuse, which is very useful if you're, someone who's doing... bug triaging for one project one day and then for another project the next day, you want to have a different view and not have to keep filtering everything every day.
Mm. Mythbuntu has moved to askubuntu.com for its official support.
Mm.
Good on it.
As opposed to a forum.
Ah, okay. Yeah.
So, So yeah. This is the Myth TV specialized distro of Ubuntu.
Yes.
Respin, I think, is probably the word.
No, it's not.
No?
No, it's an officially blessed derivative distribution.
Ah.
Is that what we've got on here?
Yes, it is. It's what we use.
Yes.
Although we're kind of a couple of versions behind. I don't want to get Unity on it. No, no, no.
It runs, yeah, that sucks.
Every time it upgrades, we break something.
It runs XFCE anyway. But yeah, it's good, nice to see another kind of member of the Ubuntu family coming on board with Ask Ubuntu. It seems to be really, really successful.
Yeah, it's working out really, really well.
AskGeorge.com.
Michael Hall has published some mock-ups of possible Unity interfaces for smartphones. The mock-ups include having the dock move to make the best use of space depending on orientation, and an idea for a full-screen overlay of indicators.
It looks quite nice.
Yeah, I thought that.
I think it'll work well on larger format displays.
Like
I still
Street
think
Street type thing,
yeah. Yeah, it seems to be a little, kind of the notification, or the bar, I'm not sure what the technical term is, seems to be a bit small still for like mobile phone format devices.
Yeah. Yeah. I mean, we're very early in, you know.
Well, it's only a mock-up, really.
Exactly, it's just a mock-up. But it's great because this is, I think this is one of the first, I think there's been two or three on OMG Ubuntu that people have put out of what they think an Ubuntu phone might look like. And as right now, there is no Ubuntu phone. So, you know, anything.
Sky's your limit.
Yeah. Yeah, exactly. You can put whatever you like in, yeah.
Okay. And
that's all the bit about Ubuntu.
Gerald.
It's time for your feedback, and this time round we have an email from Stephen Kenneth Fuller, who emailed us to ask,
I'm looking for some advice from your friend, yourselves and, stroke or, your listeners. I have some code that my work partners and myself want to open source, as we feel it will be useful for many coders in the creation of both desktop and mobile applications. I'm looking for any advice on how to go about open sourcing code for the first time. We're thinking maybe an Apache or GPL license. But it's just a case. Is it just a case of sticking a license on the code and posting a URL to a repository? Is it better to host your own repository or use something like Google Code? How do we make the right people aware of its existence?
That's a lot of questions.
It's brilliant.
Well, I think you made the right start by asking us.
And I would say ask Simon Phipps how to open source your code.
He knows everything. Well, in one respect, I think it is quite easy, isn't it, Mark?
Well, as long as you definitely own the rights to all the copyright of the code,
yeah.
And you're happy with the terms of the license you're choosing. Obviously, there are differences between the Apache and the GPL license that you should be aware of. But other than that, if it's hosted somewhere and people can get at it and you can tell the people about it, then yeah, it's not exactly hard.
I've done it. And I think the biggest thing for us was the libraries, other people's libraries we were using. We had to make sure they were compatible and that they were redistributable.
Yeah.
So you can literally just stick a header at the top of each of the files in your source code bundle, assuming it's more than one file,
yeah.
And that will do the job. You stick that tarball up or a zip file up on the website and say, here it is.
Yeah, include a full copy of the license with it, just to be nice, make sure people are clear on it, and yeah.
So you can choose to use Google Code or SourceForge or Launchpad or whatever you might want to use.
Or just stick a tarball up.
Yeah. Yeah, you can choose to do that if you want to have a public revision control as well, but you can just release a zip file or tarball of your code.
Mm.
So it can be as easy or as hard as you make it.
I actually did this with a shell script last week because I created a rubbishy little shell script to create screencasts, and people keep asking me how I do the screencasts because I file bugs and I attach videos of what I was doing when I do it. And I put it up on Launchpad and already had feedback from three people with suggestions for improvements, even like one line improvement that was, you know, great, that I didn't even know about. And I'm learning stuff from other people just giving me patches. It's fantastic.
You can also check out the website at opensource.org that has guidance on the different open source licenses and the differences between them and how to implement them. So it's worth checking out too.
Daniel Keeping emailed us this question.
First off, I'm sure you hear this continually, but the show is amazing and the most entertaining way to keep up with the latest Ubuntu happenings, so thanks.
We don't hear that anywhere near enough.
That's because I usually edit that bit out.
I'm a massive fan of Ubuntu and I've been using it for several years now. I would love to give Natty or Aneric a good test, but simply cannot move away from a usable Lucid on a permanent basis because once again, after installation, I am dumped to terminal. I'm a techie, so can fix this issue, but I think it is inexcusable that any user should get dumped into a non-graphical environment when they are trying to make this OS for the average user. Maybe Intel are to blame for not providing drivers, but if I have a perfectly working system in Lucid, I don't think my hardware should be written off three releases later. I would love to hear what you think.
I completely agree. We shouldn't drop you to a shell. Yeah.
Yes. When you said drop, do you literally mean that it boots and it only boots into a shell?
Yeah, you get a black screen with a logon prompt.
Oh.
Often.
Oh.
Or if you're really lucky, you might get dumped to an X.org recovery screen. Safe, yeah, kind of like
with
a safe mode.
Terminal
yeah.
in it, which is yeah. essentially the same. Yeah.
It's so not nice.
Why is that? Why does that happen?
No graphics driver?
There's a load of reasons, and some of them can be, that there isn't a graphics driver anymore for that video card, but that's quite
Seems
rare.
Unlikely, that, because there's so many generic ones.
Yeah, well, yeah, but there are some horrible video cards out there. Hmm. But more often than not, actually, in days gone by, you probably had to tweak your xorg.conf, and now you're less likely to need it, and probably, possibly, there's something in that xorg.conf that no longer is right or works with the current Xorg, and thus X won't start and you're dropped to a prompt.
So you should let it overwrite your old settings.
Well, the first thing I would do is just bin the Xorg.conf and let X try and figure it out itself.
Or move it to a safe place.
Nah, bin it. Well, you've got backups, haven't you?
Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
There you go.
Yeah, I use my GUI backup program to restore it.
It is a problem because, you know, that's the one thing. If you can't even get a logon, you know, decent GUI logon screen, or you can't get to your desktop, then for a lot of users, that's a real problem.
Yeah.
And that's you're getting to the territory there where people are going to go and get a CD and reinstall rather than fix it. Because if that's your only computer and all you get is a black screen, you're pretty hosed. You know, there's not much you can do.
Mm-hmm.
Well, yeah, as a techie, this guy is able to, you know, kind of work around a few things. But, you know, if that's your only computer, you're pretty...
I wouldn't know what to do in that situation. I don't know how to restore a broken Xorg. Wouldn't know where to start, really.
I used to.
Well, like I said,
you don't do it anymore.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've done it in the past, but I've no idea now.
Yeah.
Well, good luck.
Yeah, good luck with that. And finally, the Wing Commander appears to have joined the 20th century and launched his own website, which you can find at flightofthevulcan.weebly.com.
It's yes. rather good.
Yes.
If you want to know the history of the Wing Commander.
It's brilliant.
Yes, it really is.
What have we spawned?
I don't think we spawned that.
But you can download all his episodes. Okay.
What have we failed to prevent?
Yes. Yeah, you can. He's put all his audio files up there.
Yeah. Or you could listen back to this series of the Ubuntu UK podcast and hear them all in situ.
Yes.
Yeah.
Hear our amusing commentaries on them.
I wonder if Marjorie helped him.
Well, one would hope so.
Yes.
And on which note, we have received this message.
Uh-oh.
Dear Pod People, my name is Ramona and I'm 9. I have some questions for you. My brother says you're the pod people from some rubbish film called Invasion of the Body Snatchers, and you've got roots 4 feet and pumpkins 4 heads. But I don't believe him. He watches too much Doctor Who. So why does my dad listen to you when he really doesn't understand what you're talking about? He says it's all very clever and educational. I don't know what's so educational about pushing buttons. And why have you got a duck for a mascot? My brother says it's a penguin, but I think it looks more like a duck. Ducks can't use computers because they can't type. Unless they hit the keys with their beaks. I think that's what my dad is trying to do when he hits his head on the keyboard. there's usually lots of swearing because he can't make it work. I don't know what the problem is because I can make it work. Like recording this. It's easy. Bye-bye, pod people.
Wow.
I love pod people.
Thank you, Ramona.
Register that domain. Pod people.
Yeah, well, we're waiting for Ramona to set up a website now.
Yeah.
Blimey.
Yeah. Well, that is all of your feedback.
That's all for this episode. Thank you for listening. You can find out how to get in touch with us on our website, podcast.ubuntu-uk.org, including voicemail numbers and Twitter feeds, Facebook and RSC channels. Let us know what you think of the show or give us your thoughts about Ubuntu and the community around it. Join us on Tuesday the 20th of December for a special live Christmas episode, including our Christmas play.
Yes. And...
uh-oh.
It's also the last episode in our season.
What, the next one?
The next one will be the last one of the season.
Wow.
Mince pies.
I get my Tuesdays back.
Yes. Yeah. And some of your Wednesdays. So we will be having a break probably for January and then starting up again in February. We'd just like to have a bit of a break to recharge our batteries.
Indeed.
Have we decided this?
Yes.
Okay.
Join us next time. Bye-bye.
Bye-bye.